We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from 5-star app Meditation Studio and Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you build or deepen your meditation practice. Its unique biofeedback helps you see what's happening in your brain as you meditate. Check it out at choosemuse.com. Today's guest is Dr. Fred Luskin. Dr. Luskin is the director and co-founder of the Stanford University Forgiveness Project and is the author of several best-selling books, including Forgive for Good, A Proven Prescription for Health and Happiness. He dives into the healing powers and medical benefits of forgiveness and why, based on all the research that they've done, forgiveness matters a lot. He's also the author of Stress-Free for Good, 10 Scientifically Proven Life Skills for Health and Happiness, which emerged from his 10 years as a researcher in preventative cardiology at the Stanford University School of Medicine. He shares that you don't actually have to forget in order to forgive, or even skip the grieving step for that matter, but you may have to change the story around what happened. It's good stuff for those of us who might hold a grudge or two. Now, here's Dr. Luskin. Dr. Fred Luskin, it's so great to have you on Untangle today. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Were you inspired by a personal motivation to forgive something big in your life? How did you even get interested in forgiveness as a project?
In a more personal sense, there were two interests that converged. One was, I have had a meditation practice since college. So for me, that's quite a long time ago, about 40 years almost. I had formed a good part of my life. And so I wanted to do a dissertation study on something related to one of the spiritual qualities and virtues. The forgiveness, I chose that in part because I had been very badly hurt by a close friend a few years before then and had struggled like crazy to get over it. I mean, struggle doesn't even cut, you know, I couldn't get over it was a much better way of putting it. And I was just miserable. I was a licensed therapist and none of the therapy stuff did me any good. And the only thing that helped was my wife, like, said, you know, Fred, you got to do something. This is like ridiculous. So that nudged me. Somehow I stumbled upon the idea of, well, why don't I just forgive this guy? And it made a difference. And what I took was some of the strategies that I used to forgive that person and turn them into the stuff that formed the cornerstone of the Forgiveness Project.
Whoa, interesting. I know you did quite a bit of research around your dissertation and even since then.
Forgiveness is one of those underutilized, misunderstood qualities that appears to be really good for human beings. There hasn't been that much research, but almost whatever research there is has been positive. It's an indication that the stress of not letting go of past troubles harms people's bodies and minds. So we've done research to show that it relieves depression and decreases stress and anxiety and increases happiness. Other people have shown that it can reduce the experience of pain. We co-sponsored a project where it helped lower blood pressure. We've done a work that shows that it's helpful to people at work. It's one of those antidotes to life that is just under-practiced.
Yeah, it's so interesting because you repeat this several times in your book, so I got it loud and clear, that it begins with, number one, you take something too personally. Number two, you blame the other person for how you feel. And number three, you create a grievance story around that and you ruminate and never let it go. How do we begin to turn that around? You talk about a lot of steps in the book, but I think, as you said, like when you were having a hard time forgiving this guy, it is so much harder to really forgive than it seems, right? Like it's just so hard to let go once you've been trapped into those three points.
Well, one reason that it's so difficult is there's very little cultural support for it. So most of our communities stay together to have shared enemies. And so that's one of our, you know, tribal legacies of being a human being is we get support from others in a shared threat. And so we retain a lot of that in our worlds when people harm us. It's like, you know, we align with the victim, so to speak. The other reason that it's so difficult is the brain is so exquisitely fine-tuned to threat and danger and problems and mulling it over and very badly set up to offer kindness. Like it has to be safe and practiced. That kindness is much harder for our biology, except for people we consider in an in-group or in a tribe that keeps us safe. And so that's a tough legacy. The religious traditions have provided at times a counterbalance to that by at least suggesting to people that, hey, this is a good idea and you might want to make peace or you might want to return harmony to your community by forgiving. What the handful of us who have done this academically and scientifically have shown that you can take specific methodologies, do research on their effectiveness, and they help people over a wide range of hurts and insults. Like it, you know, the value of forgiveness is it's not just for one thing, like, oh, you had a bad lover or your parents were terrible. The value of forgiveness is its wide-ranging implications for the myriad of ways in which human beings can be hurt.
Do you think that we need coping skills earlier in our lives so that when we get into these situations where we take something too personally or we're creating these grievance stories, we will be able to let go of them? What's the difference between people who can let go and move on and people who just, as you say, rent so much space in their brains to these disappointments in life?
I mean, some of the research known conditions that limit forgiveness are the quality of narcissism, the sense that it's all about me. They take mm-hmm. everything personally. A deficit in gratitude is a problem for forgiveness. So if you don't have the capacity to see good in your life, it's going to be very hard to balance out the painful stuff, which your mind and nervous system are going to obsess upon. And you need some way to show balance in that, yeah, this happened bad, but that's happened good. And the third thing is that we don't educate people on realistically how to apologize for things that we've done. And that's a real limitation. As much as forgiveness is neglected, sincere apology is neglected too. And I would say more important than like just educating like kids younger, the most important thing would be to like teach families to, within their own domains, to both model and teach their children and each other to sincerely apologize when they've done wrong, to practice forgiveness, to tell your kid, you know, I really think what you did was awful, but you're not awful.
Right.
And I really think what you did is awful, but you're still my kid and I love you. Those messages of apology and forgiveness, if modeled in families by parents, would create children that would naturally know how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you talk about in the book, too, in terms of locating the impersonal part of the hurt. So we don't take so much responsibility, or we don't take things so personally. I loved this idea that you talk about in the book related to the rigid and unenforceable rules that we have. So often when we get really hurt by something, it's because we believe that things should be a certain way. And instead of wishing they were different, we actually believe they should be different. And so we feel hurt. Can you talk a little bit about the unenforceable rules and also the difference between forgiving and forgetting or denying something happened?
Forgiving or denying something happened for like serious insults is impossible. So it's not like you can say, so what happened to my kid? He was murdered. You can't forget really serious things. So forgive and forget only has some meaning for trivial things. It's a stupid statement for real wounding. What forgiveness is and the power of it is the deep ability humans have to remember differently, to not forget, but remember in a way that doesn't cause so much suffering. And actually what forgiveness is a change of story around what happened. You don't forget it. It's not like you say that was okay. What you say is, yeah, that was awful, and I don't need to ruin my life or anybody else's life moving forward, because I'm not going to stay stuck as a victim. There's nothing in me that needs to hold on to the past, because that like contaminates my future. The unenforceable rules piece is each of us lives with so much anxiety, knowing that we're vulnerable to so many things. I mean, being a human being is a very touch and go, delicate thing. We can be hurt so easily and disappointed so easily.
A word from our sponsor, Happy Mammoth. This is the company that created the amazing supplement, Hormone Harmony, and they are dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients like herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors, especially those chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. They're offering our listeners 15% off the first order at happymammoth.com using the promo code UNTANGLE. So if you're tired of hot flashes, night sweats, low moods, poor sleep, you get the drill. The things that put your life on hold, you will want to check them out. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com with the code UNTANGLE at checkout. That's happymammoth.com with the code UNTANGLE. Now, on to Untangle. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now over to Untangle.
So one of the things that we do to make this kind of chaotic, like uncontrollable life more manageable for us is we make up rules about how things are going to go. So if you get married, you make up a rule that my partner, you know, will never cheat on me, shouldn't cheat on me, can't cheat on me, won't cheat on me. But they can cheat on you if they want. But in our minds, we make it into a rule. It's not right. It's wrong. Blah, blah, blah. You know you have one of these unenforceable rules when they cheat on you and you go ballistic. Because what you're going ballistic about is that they broke your rule, not that they did something that they chose to do. I mean, everybody's allowed to choose what they want to do. But the ballistic is, wow, they didn't follow my needs, rules, and expectations. So therefore, they need to be punished. It's that crazy making that floods our system with all sorts of stress chemicals. And it makes it impossible to move on because we keep on reminding ourselves, they broke this rule. They broke this rule. What they did was wrong. This was awful. It's not appropriate, blah, 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 blah. And so we can stay stuck arguing about this rule 5 years after everything in life has moved on. It's just gone on to something else. And it's these unenforceable rules that keep us stuck. If we see our kind of expectations and hopes more realistically, then we would see that we have a legitimate almost need to have things that we want to have happen. We need to have goals. We need to have, you know, things that we think are better than other things. Otherwise, we'd be lost. So we get married and we say, well, I'd really like to have a stable marriage or a good partnership, but I know it's, I can't force it. So what I might do is do my best as a partner to make them less likely to cheat, which is different than they have to be loyal. And the unenforceable rule causes us to make believe we're doing something about a danger when we're actually doing nothing except soothing our own anxiety.
Well, this might be hard for some people to take because the question is when you have a belief or a trust in someone, since you use the example of someone cheating on you and they cheat on you, what is that process of forgiveness so that you don't harbor a complicated set of grievances for the rest of your life?
Well, the absolute level of trust was just a fantasy, and it never existed in reality. That you may have fantasized in your mind that the person would always do what you wanted, but there was no reality to it. And so, you know, living in a fantasy is one thing, but punishing somebody else because they shatter your fantasy is another thing. What the actual trust is that to the best of my ability, I have scoped out this person and I trust that I trust their basic values and I trust that most of the time they will do something that fits with what I want. That's what the trust is, but it's never certain. And then what ultimately has to happen is, are you willing to trust and have uncertainty, which allows you to love them more deeply, because you're not threatening them all the time when they don't do what you want. And that trust says, I'm willing to take this risk to enter into a relationship with someone that, like everybody else, is unpredictable, will not always do what I want, and may even hurt me. That's true reality.
Right. It does sound like you're basically saying, look, we're all human. We're all going to fail sometimes. And you have a choice. When someone fails you, you have a choice to be with them and feel free to love them again or leave them. But the idea of staying stuck in not forgiving isn't good for you or the other person.
It was based on something dishonest, that they owed you certain things. Nobody owes us what we think they owe us. They choose whether or not they want to give it to us. And we make believe it's something they owe us. And so that gets us into a lot of emotional turmoil. If we didn't have these huge expectations and unenforceable rules, what we would become is much nicer human beings. I hear you, like most people, holding on to the tension of, well, wait a second, if I can't trust them to do exactly what I want, then life is even scarier than I think it is.
Well, I think that's why people create the unenforceable rules to begin with.
Exactly.
And in psychology, in school, in religious institutions, there are rules. And so you grow up with a set of rules that you're saying, I totally get what you're saying. And I love
well,
the way you described it.
But here's
but that's
here's,
the problem.
If you can actually relax a little, and not you, I don't mean you, but I mean people, and recognize that there's more uncertainty than you might want to believe, then when the people around you do what you want, you will be much more open for gratitude and appreciation than if you have them stuck and they have to. Because by you having a have to, you then take the responsibility away from you to appreciate them. And that's where we kill relationships.
So let me ask you a question, because you do talk about some techniques for forgiveness. As you said, you went through it yourself. So let's just say hypothetically, your business partner does something that it feels unforgivable. Tell me actually like the steps that you go through or some of the techniques that you recommend that someone would be able to utilize to actually let go of their rules.
Part of it is like, I'm going to say, a stoic overview.
Okay.
Which is like, if you were in partnership for 20 years and after 20 years, the person does something terrible, you want to remember those 20 years also, that you had a lot of good time and they were helpful to you for 20 years, which is a huge plus. And you want to be thankful for that. Most of those 20 years, so in year 21, when they screw up or are unkind, you don't see it unclearly. You want to prepare yourself to actually see things clearly, not overreactively.
So that's like seeing the big picture.
Or the truth. I've had people come to me and say, you know, I married a bum. They were terrible. They lied, cheated. And some people, that's true. Some people, 6 months into the relationship, the other partner is already taking money or having affairs. But in other cases, they had 15 wonderful years together. And it's their story that's the problem, not the marriage.
Whether you stay in the marriage or don't stay in the marriage, it benefits you to change the story.
But you want to have an orientation of a little more truthfulness than just an adrenaline-generated victim position on what happened. And the healthiest among us do that. There are plenty of people who have had really terrible things happen to them who say, this sucks. and it hurts and it's going to take me years to get over. And for 50 years, I led a charmed life. What did I expect? That's a truth telling. It's not just the nervous system's threat perception. It's giving a more truthful take on your life. Then any difficulty needs to be grieved. And grief can be a long, relatively long process of upheaval, of difficulty, of stress, of threat, of craziness, because your brain has to become accustomed to a new reality. If your partner of 25 years suddenly tells you that they want a younger model, that's a huge disruption to every perception and experience that a human being has, and that is not assimilated quickly. So their grief is that period of time where your brain and everything reorients to a changed reality, and that can be a mess. Forgiveness is what wraps up grief. It says, I accept this mess. I accept the fact that in life there is suffering and difficulty, and it's not always easy to overcome, and it's often almost impossible to figure out how to deal with this. That also is, it's not permanent. After that experience, you start managing the stress of your upset. You start reminding yourself that the business partner didn't have to stay honest for the whole term of the relationship. It was great that he stayed honest for 20. The 21st year means we're done, but I don't want to see it wrongly. And you also start telling a story that gets you out of this sense of poor me, and you start seeing it from a wider lens.
Yeah, I really like what you're saying about these difficulties need to be grieved first. So it's not that this incident happens and you're supposed to like think positive and see the truth of the picture, but you do grieve. God. There's a right. Like, I accept this mess. I'm going to grieve it. I'm going to get past this stage, and then I'm going to forgive.
I can't tell you how many times I've told this to people. There's no forgiveness without suffering. I mean, You have to go through the dark night to come out the other side.
I know when you do workshops, you have a lot of people that come to your workshops when they're in their raw moments of grief and they have to work their way to forgiveness. Do you think it's better to allow yourself to go through that grief and just accept it and perhaps do some self-compassion practices and then come to a workshop or read your book or go through some of the practices like the changing the channel and the heart focus and the positive emotion refocusing recommend?
You need to suffer for a while. There's no way out of it. And yes, you want to hold that suffering with compassion. And it is so much better when you hold your own suffering with compassion. And it's going to suck for a while. That's part of the process of being human and trying to love and trying to connect. It comes with a cost. So when you are able to have also practiced like gratitude for whatever parts of the life worked out okay, then that gives us a very different way of being with the parts of life that didn't work out so well.
I love that you just said being human comes with a cost. Whenever you discover that along the way, it is a universal truth.
Yeah, so, and nobody said that it was going to be easy.
Yes, that is true.
You know, you and I and everybody else are active participants in meaning making for our lives all the time. And so we're constantly trying to figure out which tack, which way of talking to ourselves, which stories will give us the best meaning so that life feels valued and good to us. And one of the ways that human beings try to make meaning out of things is by saying, whatever it is that happened was out of my control. That I'm a victim of forces bigger and stronger and more dangerous and powerful than am I. And therefore, the consequences of this, the pain, the hurt, they're not my fault. Nobody should blame me. I'm given a pass for a while for like a certain responsibility for my own life. And that's what a victim status is. It's like, don't blame me for the fact that my life doesn't work. Don't blame me for the fact that I haven't figured out to move ahead. It's not my fault. That's a very useful way station towards better accountability. But it's useful only for a short period of time.
So you talk a lot about the science of happiness, and I would love to hear a little bit about what you think are the top three or the top five things that make us happier in life, and what are the conditions that we need to practice to create happiness in our lives?
That's a very easy question to answer.
Oh,
the thing that is most responsible for happiness is the quality of your relationships. And do you have a purpose in life outside of your own small human limitations? And third, are you grateful and capable of savoring the good that comes to you? Those are the three things that create happiness.
What are some practices that might help to create these conditions for people that don't have a purpose or aren't practicing gratitude or really struggle, have a hard time in relationships?
The work we've done in forgiveness is a much more compelling case for the absolute like neuroplasticity that people have to learn much better skills and much more coping so that they can live richer lives. The human brain, what it does is try to create habits, and it constantly tries to automate our behavior and make it predictable. And we can make it predictable with positive things or more negative things, even though the bias is overwhelmingly negative in the brain.
Why is our bias more negative, and how do we actually change that habit?
You don't want to change that habit because more than anything else, you need to survive. And the negativity bias is our survival. Is our survival mechanism.
So it helps to keep us safe.
You want your first thought to be, am I going to be okay?
Right.
You want your second thought to be, am I happy? And that's nature's survival thing. And it's good. The key to happiness, just like the key to forgiveness, is can you quiet your nervous system down through all sorts of practices, including the stories you tell, so that you can have a nervous system that can actually see all the good that's in your life? So when you've been a victim and you turn over your responsibility to your own well-being, to other forces, then you feel more helpless. When you focus on what went wrong in a relationship rather than what went right and went wrong, it becomes much harder to, in this moment, see what's good right in front of your face. And happy people simply have developed capacity to see the good that's right in their face. the bottom line, though, the two things that are most critical are, do you put enough effort, time, energy towards making people connect with you, appreciating them, doing things for them and with them so you build deep social bonds? And do you go about this life with more than just a sense of I have to take care of myself and maximize my own experience? Those are the two biggest qualities that make happier people. People who connect with people and those who have a purpose beyond just themselves.
Well, thank you so much for being on Untangle.
I appreciate it. So all the best.
All the best.
Thanks to Dr. Luskin for joining us today. You can find his books at all major booksellers and more about his workshops at learningtoforgive.com. As always, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at founders@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store and Muse at choosemuse.com. We'll see you next time.